Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Before we start today's podcast, a quick heads up on Sheerlux's VIP Club. From restaurants, bars and hotels to beauty, wellness and shopping, Sheerlux partners with some of London's best destinations and hottest brands to bring its VIPs exclusive monthly offers. So why not sign up? It'll cost you just £5 a month or £50 for the year. Use your card once or twice and you'll have made that amount back in no time. For more information, visit sheerluxvip.com. Welcome to the Sheerlux Highlights podcast with me, Charlotte Collins. This week, I'm joined by Astrid Carter, Lou Half, and Tamara Gorin. Welcome, Tamara.
Thank you.
Tamara is a Sheerlux contributor, and we're so excited to have you join us today.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start, as always, with some TV. What's everybody been watching?
I watched an interesting new series on Netflix called Abstract, The Art of Design, and where basically every episode they delve into a different form of creative. So the one I watched was with Isla Crawford, the interior designer. She was the woman behind the original Babington House. She's done some amazing products, and they were focusing on the IKEA canteen and what they're going to do for that. But it's just really fascinating to see how her studio pick up on those different elements of design from the very beginning. You know, they were talking about the Cathay Pacific Lounge, and it was really fascinating.
What do you mean the IKEA canteen? As in they're transforming all IKEA restaurants?
Exactly, they're transforming it. So sort of how they bring in those elements, it kind of is like a sterile canteen at the moment, but you know, IKEA are known for their key design elements, so how they sort of are going to be changing that. So it's really interesting.
That's really,
and they've got other ones in the series with an architect, an illustrator. But yeah, that's the first one. I really recommend it.
Cool. Well, speaking of Netflix series, The OA is back. I feel like I've banged on about The OA since I watched this first season last year, but it is probably the best thing I've ever watched on Netflix. And people always say to me, oh, I don't like sci-fi, or like, oh, I don't like fantasy. But if you're thinking it's like a Game of Thrones or even like a Stranger Things, it's not that extreme. The first season was about a girl who had gone missing as a child and was blind when she went missing. And she comes back 7 years later to her family home and has regained her sight, and it's all about what happened to her in those 7 years. And that's a kind of very basic explanation. It's way more complicated than that, and you have to kind of pay quite close attention.
Yeah, you have to really stick with it. A few people in the office have said, oh, I started it, I couldn't get into it, it's so confusing, what's going on.
It sounds a bit too sci-fi for me.
No, but it's not. It does. So it's good.
It's that
really
kind of
good.
Comeback after a few years, like what happened. It's just too,
I get that, but I'm also so not like a fantasy person. I don't watch Lord of the Rings or Star Trek or any of those things. But it's just, it's amazing storytelling, and Britt Marling, who stars in it and also writes and produces
is such so talented.
Anyway, so this new series takes on a slightly different form. Basically, without giving too much away, the first season's all about near-death experiences. That's like the theme of it. And this is kind of the aftermath of something very dramatic at the end of the first season. And it's just so clever. It's so cool. They've brought in all these new characters, really cool new twists. And just, again, as you say, just stick with it because it's so good.
Do you have to have watched the first season?
Yeah, 100%. Okay. But there's only 8 episodes in each season, so it's quite bingeable. It's so good.
I think that's something that Netflix do really well, like that kind of sci-fi but with a really cool modern twist, like Stranger Things. Like, I would never have put myself down as a Stranger Things fan, but literally can't wait for the next series.
Completely agree. Sorry, and also me again, but we're on Netflix as well. Last night I watched Amy Schumer's latest stand-up.
I keep seeing that on the menu.
I'm a massive Amy Schumer fan. I think she's so refreshing. She says the things that you would never say out loud, but are always thinking. So it's called Growing, and she's pregnant. She's due the same time as Meghan Markle. Whoa, so she's like 8 months pregnant.
Yeah. Meghan's due next month.
Yeah. Okay, so she's really pregnant. I think it was filmed at the beginning of the year. And it's all about being pregnant, being married. Her shtick in the past has always been the single thing. So obviously this is completely different, but it's still so true to her. It's so disgusting. She is so graphic.
About being pregnant.
But she still touches on her single life and how her sex life has changed. And so those kind of things. Yeah. You can kind of imagine how she puts her own spin on that.
But I think that's what people love, is that she 100%. Is so graphic. And you're just like, does she just say that?
Yeah, exactly. She says the things that just no one else will say. But actually, you love because you know what she's talking about. It's just great. Like, there's something for everybody. Not if you're not an Amy Schumer fan. You have to buy into her brand of comedy. But it's also really political as well. A lot about the difference between men and women. It's just very current, topical, and hilarious.
I also watched Free Solo. Gogglebox fans may have seen a little clip of it on an episode last week. And basically, a free climber called Alex Hanold decides to try and climb El Cap in Yosemite, which has never been done free solo before. And it's kind of something he's been working towards for 8 years. And the documentary basically shows his process and everything that he goes through in doing this.
Free solo means what exactly?
Free solo is rock climbing without any ropes. So you are completely bare hands, bare feet, everything sort of at one with nature.
But he's an experienced rock climber.
He's an experienced rock climber and, you know, a real extreme sport fan. There's one section of the documentary where he has a brain scan and they basically show that there's one area of his brain where he is not going to be...
Is it missing the risk assessment, isn't it?
Where some people will be stimulated by X, that doesn't stimulate him at all. So he pushes himself further and further. And there's one section where he talks about his girlfriend and how in life she wants to be happy and make lovely memories and be the best person she can be. And he's like, that's not what life is about for me. Life is about performance and pushing yourself to extreme limits. And it's such a fascinating watch. And, you know, it's also really beautifully filmed. When you see the footage of this cliff edge, you just think, how on earth someone even think that's comprehensible to do? So I won't ruin it to what happens, but you should all watch it.
And if you don't like heights, can you watch it?
You can. It's
like, willing if you
I think it's more about seeing somebody push themselves to such an extreme level and what people will go through.
Yeah, the psychology of it.
And how different everybody is. And yeah, it's really interesting.
Cool. Let's talk about how to make your office more fun. Apparently, the average employee spends, this is so depressing, over 92,000 hours at work during their lifetime. Mm. So it's pretty essential to make sure you're enjoying your time in the office. So with this in mind, we wrote a piece about all the ways to make your day-to-day in the office that bit more enjoyable. So I want to know, what makes a happy, fun office environment for you? Tamara?
I think it's food. I think it's food. Yeah. It just unites everyone. Everyone's, especially kind of when you get to that 4 o'clock dip. But it's like the excitement of, you know, even food in the kitchen. And suddenly everyone's up. It's like we've never been fed before. But I think it does, because then you talk about, you know, whether you like it and flavours and this, that and the other. But I think it's food. Yeah. More than drink, actually.
Yes, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Although it's quite hard if you are trying to be good. I'm getting married in a few months. So I'm trying not to have that 4 o'clock snack time thing. But then your workday instantly plummets into a depressing marathon and to the end of the day till you actually can eat something.
But there's something quite like, it kind of brings you together.
Exactly.
We all sit on the same section at that like 3:30 slump. We're kind of like, has anyone got any chocolate?
Yeah, the chocolate
and it kind of just gets you through it.
Yeah, it does. Astrid, what about you other than the chocolate?
I really love having an office pet in the office. I think it really brightens the mood. Georgie's really sweet little dog Mouse comes in now and again, and I'm pretty much 30% happier every time she's here.
Well, it does say in this piece that 34% of people say dogs at work do make them happy, and 37% would be equally attracted to a workplace that allows dogs compared to one that doesn't. I agree with that. I'd love to work somewhere where there were loads of dogs.
Would you bring in your dog?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And what if people didn't like dogs? You've got a big problem then.
Yeah. And I think you have to be considerate. Like, the dog has to be really friendly, really calm. I mean, I wouldn't bring like a Doberman in, like take up half the room. But Mouse is literally a mouse.
Yeah,
so.
Mouse is so inoffensive. Yeah. Just a sweet thing to pet. Even when you're working, when Mouse comes and sits in your lap, it's so relaxing.
Yeah.
I would say though, I think if a dog was here all the time, it would take away the, oh, how fun element when they then because I think when Mouse does come in, everyone gets so excited.
Yeah.
So it's a real treat.
Lou, what makes you have fun at work?
I agree, snacks, pets. I also think a good outside of the office activity. We were very lucky to go to Paris earlier in the week for a shoot. I think we all came away from it feeling really like close to our teams. It really united us all. It was a really lovely thing to do.
Yeah. Well, like, obviously we went for work reasons. Given that we were travelling, only a quite small percentage of the day was actually work. A lot of it was just chatting time on the Eurostar and such. And yeah, it was a really good bonding experience. Yeah. Not just talking about work all the time.
Yeah.
It was probably a bit of a giggle isn't it?
It was such good. I mean, we were so delayed. Yeah. It was a joke.
Yeah.
And we were really debating whether to go because we were warned it's sort of going to be 3 to 6 hour delays. And we just embraced it and made the most of it, yeah. Much to the perils of everybody else in the queue, I'm sure, who absolutely hates it.
Absolutely hates it.
But we had our most obnoxious.
Yeah, definitely. It was like a hen party, yeah. Basically. Yeah.
And rich.
And it was all filmed, so you'll get to see it behind the scenes. But yeah, it was really fun. I think doing things like that are really important to sort of get out of the office. Mm. You know, we've also done sports days and things last summer, which was great. And I think it's just important to take a stop sometimes and, you know, refresh.
And go out and actually speak about things that aren't work.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you work in such close proximity, but actually, if it's someone that you don't have like a day to day with, you find out such interesting things about people.
So
like,
true.
I would never have put you down to like do that. Yes, XYZ. Yeah. So, yeah, so I think that's really important.
One of the things on this list was to get rid of unnecessary meetings, and that apparently you have more fun if you don't have meetings. But I love meetings, and maybe that just makes me completely weird. And I obviously don't like them if they're like a waste of time, but I find that a really good social opportunity, particularly if it's with team members who you don't otherwise sit near. Mm. Then that's, you get the kind of 5 minutes before a meeting to catch up. And I find it, if you've got a job like ours where often you can just be kind of sat at your desk quietly working for a while, I find that more fun because then you break away and you're chatting. And it mixes up your day and makes it more interesting. And I feel like variety is what makes the workplace more enjoyable.
I also think it's the actual office itself. You know, I know that we're going to be having a revamp, and I think that just brings a bit of, you know, some fresh life, some fresh, you know, everyone gets a bit of a boost.
Yeah.
You know, if you're in some dark, dull, revolting looking office, you're less likely to, you know, have fun and, you know, feel like that. I think it really depends on your environment.
Yeah, definitely.
Well.
And also seeing daylight. I worked in an office in a basement, and particularly in the winter, when you go to work and it's dark, then you're in the basement and then you leave. Work after 6 and it's dark. It's pretty hard.
Yeah.
So unhealthy,
yeah.
God, that sounds like prison. Yeah. Well, given that we've got these 92,000 hours to make more fun, I just think a bag of sweets, that'll do it, won't it?
Yeah. Again, snacks. Yeah. Food all the way. Yeah.
Snacks is definitely the easiest way to everyone's heart.
Yeah. Get those Percy Pigs in.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's talk now about making friends as an adult, whether it's down to location, lifestyle, or things you have in common. It's not unusual to drift apart from old friends, but this says at some point you'll need to make new friends. It's true. Maybe you will. Mm. But putting yourself out there takes a bit of confidence. So I want to know, does everyone have friends that they've made in later life?
I have to say most of my friends, like best girlfriends in the world, do come from school. But yeah, I've got a couple, maybe two girlfriends that I've met in adulthood, post-uni.
That is quite adult. I think that's what we mean by adult,
and
like post-uni.
I really would consider them like really good friends. And I know I'll be friends with them until I'm a little old lady. But I do think that is quite rare.
Yeah.
I think those formative years when you're at school, they are so important, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Agree. Lou?
Yeah, I'm the same. Majority of mine are sort of school and uni. But then I've also made some really great friends in the workplace as well, who, you know, as we've then moved on to other roles, you almost then become better friends. And that's really, really lovely. But I think sometimes people do change so much as they get older that perhaps when you look back at your school friends, you have changed so much, and actually maybe you don't have that many similar interests anymore. So I think on the list it talked about looking, you know, whether you're doing extracurricular clubs, that sounds like something 10-year-olds do, but whether you're doing other activities outside of work, that is a really good way to meet new people who've got, you know, things in common with you, common interests, hobbies, that type of thing. So yeah.
That's always like the common advice place, isn't there, that you should go and join a club or do a sports or something. What does that actually mean? If you're not sport, I'm not going to go and join a netball club. So has anyone actually ever tried outside of school, uni, work to go and meet friends in that kind of way?
No.
No, that would really terrify
me. Yeah, me too. I mean, I've got a really close knit of girlfriends from primary school almost, and they're like family to me. But I would say I've met some girls that have become really close to me, usually like from school.
You mean kids school?
Yes, so like other mums, because we've got things in common, and then kind of our relationship has grown because of the kids' relationship. But I think if I needed someone at the drop of a hat, or there was some, you know, awful trauma or something like that, it would still be my primary school friends.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not saying I don't go out thinking I'm not going to make any friends. I've only got 10 friends and that's it. But to throw myself into a situation like an, you know, an activity, I just think, no.
So you feel like you've got enough friends, basically.
I mean, that sounds silly to say you've got enough friends, but I think I've got my close-knit of friends, and I love meeting new people, you know, and I'm very sociable, but I don't go out to think, I need a new best friend.
Yeah.
You know, where can I find them?
I think sometimes it maybe takes you by surprise, and you're not going out there to look for new friends, but maybe you're at a event or a meeting or a class or something, and you start speaking to someone, you're like, actually, we get on really well. Yeah. And I think that's really nice, actually, to then, rather than just park that and be like, oh, that was nice, then be like, oh, you know, should we go for a coffee? I think,
And actually, despite all the perils of social media, that is where Instagram is so good, because I know where I've hit it off with people through work events, then following that up on Instagram, it's like the non-aggressive way to follow it up, isn't it? Because you're not necessarily going to take someone's number. That's a bit weird. It's not, we're not dating. But actually, you can follow someone on Instagram, start a bit of a dialogue, and even if it's a slow burner, it's quite a good way of having, I don't know if friendship's the word for it, but a continued relationship, which
I do find though, that relationship hard to define. Like, if there's somebody maybe that you followed on Instagram for years, you've both been chatting, you sort of have a dialogue, but you've never actually met in real life, are they a friend?
Like, they're your Instagram friend.
What do you call that? It's very, I find that strange.
Yeah, I think a friend has to be somebody that you've met.
I also think it's about memories. You know, it's like you've grown up with someone, they've seen you through, you know, schooling, you know, your first job, your first boyfriend, getting married, like all the little bits. You know, they're memories for you. You've got so much together that new friends, new people that you meet, obviously it's another time in your life, but you can't really give that to someone. You've either got it or you haven't.
It's like when you meet someone's parents and it puts them into a context, it's almost like those people have all the context they need about you, whereas actually newer friends, there's just too much to learn almost, isn't there? You've got to go back too far. It's so lovely that everybody is still friends with their school friends, but do you have stuff in common with those people? Is it a happy coincidence that you do? Because I'm the same, my best friends are my school friends, but actually I sort of lack friends who have a shared interest, and I love the fact that my best friends have all that shared history, but that's not actually the same as having people you can natter to about your day-to-day interest necessarily.
See, I think that's nice though. I think that's a real positive about my group of friends. You know, just it's so different that we all have gone into different areas of work. You know, I think that's a positive because then you're not talking about work, you're not talking, but we still have the same, you know, we love fashion, we love this, we love that, we still have a lot in common with each other. That's what really bonds us together as friends. So I don't think you have to be, you know, working in the same area or have the same hobbies or anything. I think that just adds, you know,
that's
character to your relationship.
I think that's true. Astrid?
One of my best friends, she's a lawyer. We are literally chalk and cheese, have nothing in common. But I don't have a sister, and she is the closest thing that I'll ever have to a sister. And yeah, I think it is that shared history. Like, we literally met on our first day of school when we were four, and we're still such great friends now. And you just can't really match that, I think, in adult life.
Yeah, so truly.
Yeah, mine's a bit of a mixture. I guess my school friends kind of tick that box. But then I guess the friends that I've made through work, I think you do maybe have more of that sort of similar interest in terms of what we're doing. I study fashion at uni, so my uni friends sort of got that in common as well. So I guess I've got a bit of both, really.
And one final thing in this piece, it suggested using apps to meet new people. There's obviously Peanut for new mums and for parents. Would you ever consider branching out and using an app?
I think it's a great thing to have in terms for people that, you know, there's a lot of people that need someone to talk to and not fortunate as all of us, having close-knit friends, family, sisters, etc. So I think it's nice to know that there are places that you can make friendships, you know, that you don't feel lonely, that you feel like, especially a new mum, that you're not in this bubble, you're thinking, oh my God, who else is up at this time? Who else is, you know, feeding through the night? Who else is exhausted? You know, you feel quite alone at times. So I think it's lovely to be able to have that. Mm-hmm. I haven't personally used an app, but I think it's only a positive thing.
Mm-hmm. So we've all agreed that work can be a really great environment to meet new people. So what are your top tips for either engaging new people or continuing that friendship? Mine's obviously to follow them on Instagram.
I think just to find a common ground. And I think where I find really interesting where friendships can really develop is just when you take such an interest in someone and what they are doing. You know, if someone's going on a trip somewhere, really follow up on that. So I think just making someone feel that you really listen to what they're saying. And I think that kind of goes both ways, I think.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I agree with Lou.
Astrid?
I think just be a bit brave about it. I think women often feel a bit silly. Like you said, it feels a bit like you're asking for someone's number, like you'd want to go on a date with them or something. But actually, once you've asked and you've got past that kind of awkwardness, the other person is probably going to be so happy that you have asked. Yeah. And yeah, just be a bit brave about it.
I also think set people up. We used to have this joke about lady dates, didn't we? Because a former colleague was set up on a lady date, like a friendship date, basically, with somebody
who thought
that they might have stuff in common. And I had that actually. A girl who I'd met through a work dinner like a year ago suggested that we go for a coffee. To me, it was a bit out of the blue, but actually it was really nice. Yeah. And it was just a different person and a different perspective. And so actually, don't be afraid to set people up.
Yeah, and I think that's a lovely touch, actually. Yeah, I think it's a really nice thing to
have
do.
A dinner party.
Yeah.
Over and just mix it up. This is a public service announcement. Everybody is going to want to book a holiday after this section. Whether it's LA from La La Land or the south of France from Call Me By Your Name, there's a host of films out there that can make you really want to visit certain destinations. So we wrote a list about all the different places that we've been inspired to visit, having seen them in a film. Astrid, on top of the list for you.
It's on this list and it's The Talented Mr. Ripley. Oh my God. It just literally makes me want to fly to Italy, wear some like lovely linens, eat like oranges and sip wine and just chill and be quite glamorous.
It is the most glamorous film, isn't it? There's like the Amalfi thing, but then there's also the Rome thing and it's just the whole thing. You just want to buy into that whole glamour, don't you?
Totally.
I think Italy always tops the list. When you see like any Italian destination or any of these films, you just think, oh my goodness.
Yes.
And they're all impeccably dressed and just the whole lifestyle, you're just like, oh my
and
God.
And Italy does feel quite kind of cinematic, doesn't it? Whether you're in a city or by the coast, you kind of have one of those moments like, I'm in a film right now.
Yeah, that's so true. God, it's just so beautiful.
I remember The Italian Job. Has anyone seen The Italian Job?
I actually haven't, but I was thinking of that when you said it.
And that's just all over Italy. I mean, and it's just stunning. And you think of these film stars and you think, they're so lucky to be in these
places. I know.
To go to every, they travel the world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they probably look outside their window and think, yeah, you know, this is what I do. But, I mean, where they, you know, film is just, it's incredible.
No, God, Gwyneth Paltrow lucked out on that one, didn't she? Lou, what about you?
Two for me that really stand out are A Good Year. Don't know if you guys have seen that.
No.
It's with Russell Crowe and he works in the city and is then sent to the south of France and is sort of very out of his comfort zone. You know, he's a real workaholic and it's just set in the most beautiful setting. It's also got Marion Cotillard, so there's a bit of romance there and it's just so, so beautiful. Another one is Stealing Beauty with Liv Tyler. Such a like 90s classic. Again, I think that's Italy and it's just very natural, raw beauty and just like real sort of teenage romance. That idea sort of, you know, leaving the city and going on holiday and having that sort of summer of love, which is really amazing.
Tamara, what about you? Any other films that make you really want to visit somewhere?
I always enjoyed watching all the Ocean's 11, Ocean's 12 films and things because I think, you know, just the fun fact and all the lights and the glitz of Vegas and the strip and, you know, there's nowhere like it in the world. Mm. You know, if you haven't been, it's really like, it's a must. I have been. Yeah. I've been a few times.
Even The Hangover actually can give you a bit of a taste of Vegas, can't it?
There's something in the air. There's just no other place like it. I just think it's just got glitz and glamour and it's so fake, really.
It's so fake.
But I love that. I love that it's so different to any other destination.
Yeah, that is actually, that's a good one. Vegas, hadn't even thought of that. Well, mine are, I don't know if you've seen the film that Johnny Depp and Amber Heard starred in together, which sparked their relationship, The Rum Diaries, and it's set in Puerto Rico. And oh my God, it's almost like watching Narcos, and it's that whole kind of the glamorous side of South America, but just incredible. And again, so glamorous, so much wealth and opulence, but in this really tropical setting, which is so stunning. My other one is Pretty Woman. I love LA, and you can't beat the 80s for that glamour as well. And just all down Rodeo and her at the Beverly Wiltshire. Like, I mean, Beverly Wiltshire isn't actually that nice anymore, but back in its heyday, you just want to be her, maybe minus the prostitute bit, and, you know, the glamorous side of LA in those days, which is just so incredible. Like, when at the end, where Kit comes to visit her and they go to the pool and she's in that, like, little short suit, and yeah, you just so want to buy into the whole thing, don't you? Is there anywhere that you've seen that you would actively go to that place because you were a fat? You know how people do that, like, Sex and City tour of New York?
Oh, yeah.
Is there anywhere you'd actively go because you'd seen it in a film?
I think I'd sort of, like, the one in New York, there's the Friends apartment and then there's also Carrie's apartment. And I wouldn't be like, oh, must do this at 4 p.m.
But wasn't
today.
Friends shot in LA?
Yeah, but the outside of the apartment is really.
So, like, just the montage between scenes.
Yeah. Like, and actually, if you follow Courtney Cox on Instagram, the other day, she went and stood outside that apartment.
Oh, no. Another one that I loved was The Night Manager, and that was obviously in Mallorca, which really made me want to go there.
So where Hugh Laurie's character lives, that incredible fortress, that is a real place called Fortaleza, which is stunning, and you can get married there. There's also the scene where the little boy gets kidnapped, and that's Beach Restaurant, and that has been there for about, I don't know, 50 years or something, and completely now impossible to get into. It was just this, like, random shack restaurant, and now it's, like, a hot tourist destination. And there's also the scene where they're on that incredible terrace, and him and, I can't remember her character's name, Elizabeth Debicki, the woman who he has the affair with, and they go and, like, have sex against a wall in, like, this beautiful hotel that's, like, round the corner from my place. It's really, really stunning there.
I would have assumed that was shot just, like, in a studio. And,
well, maybe the bit where they've gone around the corner is, but the whole terrace and they, like, go around the corner, and that is in Mallorca.
Yeah. Actually, there's amazing locations in that series.
Yeah, they really
like
are.
When they go to Egypt and...
Yeah, and all, like, the bits in the desert. Yeah. God, that series was so good.
It is also worrying, though, how much of an impact a film can have on the environment there, like the beach in Koh Phi Phi. That has now closed. You know, too many tourists were coming to see it, which is such a shame because that was stunning. I was lucky enough to go 15 years ago or something crazy. It was so beautiful, like the most beautiful sort of natural landscape I've ever seen. And such a shame that that's had to happen.
That's so true. Really, well, for more inspiration from the movies for destinations to visit, do check out the piece on site. Let's talk now about our makeup essentials, whether it's a great foundation or a bronzer that we swear by. We're going to talk a bit about the things that we can't live without. So, Astrid, first up, what is your absolute makeup must-have?
The thing I always spend money on is foundation. You're putting it directly on your skin, it seeps in, it's there all day. I often top up throughout the day. So I think it's really important to get a good one that's going to make your skin look great, and B, one that's not going to, you know, make you spotty or clog your pores. So I've got a few. The one I'm using at the moment is a Laura Mercier, but the one I go back to time and time again, and the one that I always get compliments on, is Clinique's Beyond Perfecting. It is full coverage. I would say it's like my going to a wedding foundation.
Okay.
But seriously, I get so many compliments when I've, like, applied it properly with a beauty blender, etc. People are like, you literally look like you've been airbrushed.
Cool.
So,
wow. Is it expensive?
About £28, I think.
That's not horrible.
But I mean,
for a foundation.
Foundations are that expensive, and they can go up beyond 40 quite often. So, and I think if it's, you know, like I said, wearing it on your skin every day, you should.
And you
should
also
invest.
Don't need a lot.
No,
you
can,
exactly. You don't
so
need
it does.
Yeah, if you apply it properly, it can go quite far.
Great. Tomorrow, what about you?
Oh God, there's so many.
Resident beauty expert, hit us.
I wear a lot of makeup.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
You look like you wear.
You're very
like,
you're
in a great way.
Look natural.
Yes,
so
I wear
natural.
A lot of makeup. I would say, I think for me, and I don't think people wear it enough, is blusher. I kind of will try and top up throughout the day. It just makes me look like I'm awake. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I've had
it's
5 hours.
It's a real perk up, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it makes you, like, when you look in the mirror, you feel like just that bit healthy. You look alive.
Yeah.
Do you use a cream or a powder?
It depends, actually. Usually I'll have a cream in my, like, makeup kit that I've got with me in my handbag, just because then I know it's not going to spill anywhere. I actually broke yesterday my nose.
Oh, no.
It smashed on my bathroom floor. But I was literally there picking up the bit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
the little specks. Mm-hmm. I was like, no, I'm gonna get the most out of this. So I think blush is my main thing. Also, mascara. I just can't walk out without it.
So what mascara do you swear by?
I actually swear by Max Factor mascaras.
Oh,
yes, they do a great, there's a 2000 calorie mascara But their best one, I think, is Masterpiece Max. I mean, it's won loads of awards. You know, I think there's three sold every few seconds. It gives great coverage, but it's subtle. It's not like, you know, you're putting on massive lashes, you know, that are a bit too full on. But I love it. I keep going back to it. And I think it's under a tenner as well.
Amazing.
And in terms of blushes, which cream blusher would you recommend?
Bare Minerals is great. They have a range of blushes and they're all very natural, like the tawny roses. So you can build on them as well. But I would use the powder blushes from them, but I'd get a blusher brush always.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, it's nice for the cream blushes you can do with your fingers, but some people tend to, you know, think, oh, I haven't got time for brushes, but something like a blusher brush is really important.
Interesting. I bang on about it all the time, but I swear by Steeler's cream blushes.
I have one.
They are the best. Yeah. I've used it my whole life.
I have a coral one from Steeler. To look at, you think, oh my God, is she actually going to put that on her skin?
Yeah.
And I do. But it's great. It's so subtle and it stays for ages and it just gives you that little pop of colour that you just think, oh, I actually look like I'm awake and
human
living.
Lou, what about you?
I'm a real stickler for beauty products. I've sort of maybe used the same things for the past sort of 5-6 years. Charlotte Tilbury retoucher pen is like my absolute go-to, just around the eyes, dark circles around your nose. Like, I don't often wear foundation, but that will sort of really make you feel a bit more awake. Then Benefit Hoola, I have used since I was about 13.
I love it when people still say they use Hoola. Somebody else said that the other day.
I really rate Hoola.
No, I'm not criticizing it at all. It's so throwback in my head.
And literally, I remember like almost getting one every birth and it being such a treat.
It was like if somebody had Hoola, they were the coolest person you knew.
And I say packaging as well.
Yeah,
do you use the brush?
No, I find the brush. It's a very odd shape, and I actually don't wash my brushes, so sorry. Yeah. But I remember speaking to our beauty editor and saying, "Look, I've used this for such a long time. Like, what should I be using instead?" And she was like, "Why?
Becky loves it.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it." And then I also love Rosie for Autograph Cream Blusher. It has got such a lovely, gentle glow and just like a little bit on dapples of your cheeks and just like the ridge of your nose can always just give you that like tiny, like sun-kissed glow. I completely agree with you guys. I think blusher is that one thing that maybe is overlooked, I think. You'll automatically go, oh, I need more coverage or I need a bit of bronzer. But I think a bit of blusher is so underrated. Mascara, again, Chanel is like my number one. I know that is very expensive for what it is, but once you get a good brush, I think you can't really go back.
Yeah.
Also, if you're quite low maintenance with your makeup, and if you're only buying, you know, 5 hero products, you're not spending a fortune, are you?
Well, I like a bit of a shimmer, I have to say. So obviously, all of those things are essentials. I also wear quite a full face of makeup, so I do rely on quite a few things. But I'm always really scared of looking too matte. I like quite a glossy look because otherwise you look cakey, and I really hate that look. So because I like a full coverage foundation to combat that, I use Bobbi Brown Shimmer Brick, which again I've used like forever. I think that's one of their iconic products, but oh my God, it is the most illuminating thing ever. It is a powder and you can get them in multiple different shades, but they're those blocks that have like, I think they have 5 different
shades
in the palette.
And you can use them as eyeshadows as well.
Yeah,
and
you
like
can.
Put them on key or keep it.
That's another one
like that.
When they've broken, I've like picked up the pieces.
Yeah.
And actually, in a way, it kind of works better because then you've got all the, if you're using it as a highlighter, they're all kind of mixed together rather than in stripes. And it just needs such a small amount and it just is the most amazing definer.
Lot of brands have copied that because it's so successful.
So good. Yeah. And they're not cheap. They're like 30 something, but God, they last for, I mean, seriously, forever.
With all Bobbi Brown stuff, you get a lot of bang for your buck. I think it's just such practical makeup.
Yeah.
Like there's no bells and whistles to it or anything like that. It literally just makes you look better, but like you.
Completely.
And it was definitely the first brand, like grown up makeup brand that I kind of got involved with. And I remember I had a foundation and I had the eyeshadow palette. Do you remember they had like the little drawer that came out? So there's like 4 on top and then four below. And I literally just thought it was the best thing ever.
Yeah.
I had it for years, probably way longer than I should have kept it.
I think Bobbi Brown does nude so well. You know, as Astrid said, makes you look like you, but that bit
better.
Version.
Yeah. Has anyone listened to her How I Built This podcast?
Oh, I didn't know she does.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. And basically that's sort of how it stems, is that she really saw a gap in the market for very natural beauty look makeup that really emphasised your natural beauty rather than adding like a blue eyeshadow, which was so 80s. So yeah, it's really, really interesting. Listen, if you haven't already heard.
Okay, let's end by talking about some fashion. We wrote a piece about the 10 classic fashion items that basically are never going out of style. So whether it's a Balmain blazer or a Burberry trench, these are the pieces that you can pretty much safely invest in, knowing that they'll always be around. Lou, what do you think is number one thing that isn't going anywhere?
I think the beauty of this list is there isn't really a number one. I mean, ideally, I'd take all 10. And I think it really is that list that I will constantly go back to in my head. The Chloe Susanna boots I have wanted since day dot. Unfortunately, I just personally find them so uncomfortable, but I still really want them and I still try them on in the hopes that perhaps my feet have changed, but they just aren't comfy. But I just think they look so cool.
They are also really expensive now.
Really expensive.
So they first came out in like the Sienna days when Boho was everything, but now they're £950.
Yeah,
which is
like £350.
Yeah, and really expensive.
But to be fair, a lot of these classics have now gone up in price considerably. Obviously, they have seen what has happened with them and the demand for them. But I think what you will see with each of those pieces is that your sort of cost per wear, it's not a trend piece. It is going to last you forever. Potentially will be handed down to your children or perhaps you've inherited from your family. And also a lot of these pieces kind of look better with a bit more wear. So I just think they're all amazing. I've got the Celine Trio, which I have used pretty much every day since I've got it sort of 3-4 years ago now. And they're all very practical pieces as well. So very easy to sort of, you know, style with anything really in your wardrobe, or you're not restricted to wearing them in one certain way or style. And that really is what those classic pieces are for.
I think the beauty about so many of them as well is because they're classics, you can buy them secondhand. So we put things like a Chanel jacket on this list. Of course, you could walk into Chanel and spend £3,000 on a Boucle jacket. But actually, if you go on Vestiaire Collective, you can get one for a couple of £100. Or like, if you are just savvy and you keep your eyes open, you go into vintage stores, you can actually find pretty much everything on this list for significantly less, and the style doesn't change. So as long as you find one in good condition, then that's great.
I remember we did a story with Hannah Strafford Taylor, and she was such an amazing Vestiaire Collective shopper. And I think if you know exactly what you want, as Charlotte said, you can sort of put in your details and you can get reminders as things come up and things like that. So yeah, you can definitely be savvy.
I think it's also, they've got such a timeless appeal that, you know, they are ridiculously expensive. I actually got a Chanel bag for my 30th and I didn't use it because I love it so much. It's kind of like this precious bag. But I also think to myself, well, it's so nice that one day, you know, I've only got one daughter. So I think, oh, she can, you know, have all these nice little bits that I've collected. And also, actually, my grandma has things that I've taken from her. And also, if you keep things well, they do last. Mm. But I think it's very hard to get over that price point. Sometimes you look at things, you're just like, are you joking?
Mm.
But I should start using my bag that
you
bit
should.
More. I
know. Yeah. Use Ashley's motto and use the good bath salts.
Yeah, always use the good bath salts.
These things are expensive. You know, you can put away £10 a month for a Burberry trench and buy one in a decade's time. It doesn't have to be buy now, see now. And that's the beauty of these long-term pieces.
They're just so ageless. Like, every single one of these pieces I would have worn in my 20s had I money been no object. I would absolutely wear now in my 30s. But similarly, I can see my mum wearing, like, in her 60s. So true.
I was doing a Q&A on Instagram this weekend, and I was so surprised at how many people asked me about buying a designer handbag and how that is still like the big question that people want to know, like, what is the bag you should be investing in? You know, how much should you be spending? What style of bag you should go for? And I completely get why people still feel like that is the key thing to invest in. But I actually think that if I could only buy one piece, it wouldn't be a handbag. It would be a coat or a jacket. I don't know why. I just feel like there are so many great handbags out there that look really good and don't have to cost thousands of pounds. And obviously a Chanel handbag is amazing and timeless and all of that stuff, but there's something about the way you feel in clothes that are really incredible.
But I think that also comes down to you loving fashion. I mean, you're a fashion editor and you get clothes, you get craftsmanship, etc. Whereas like shoes, handbags, accessories, they're not exclusive. Like everyone can rock a Chanel handbag. Like, it's not like fashion where you might feel a bit silly or a bit too dressed up or peacocking. Like, they're there for everyone.
You know, every size fits all.
Exactly.
I also think you can dress them up. You can dress them down. Accessories, I think they've just got, you know, a bit more versatility to them than a jacket.
And I think with clothes as well, where a lot of it is about the fit and, you know, whether you're feeling good about yourself that day and that, have you got a tan, have you put on a few pounds, like all of those things. You know that film In Her Shoes? So I think that's the thing with majority of these pieces are accessories. And I think it is because of that, that, you know, you can add a bag to something and it really doesn't matter how you're feeling within your body, whereas clothes can maybe, you know, affect that a bit more.
Yeah, so true. Well, we've got some great accessories on this list. Everything from Cartier Love Bracelet, which obviously is at the slightly more expensive end of the spectrum, to Gucci loafers, which are still everywhere and, you know, relatively less expensive than some of the other pieces on the list, and really are timeless, aren't they? Finally, let's talk about anoraks. Lou, Astrid, I'm gonna leave this to you guys because I really don't like them, but you guys are big anorak fans. So
there are some really cool ones on the high street. Zara has some great kind of sporty, slightly modish ones, and I think with festival season coming up, on April showers, if you're not a festival kind of girl, they're just practical. And I think that's the thing, it's definitely practicality over fashion in this case, but it's nice to know that there are some that look okay and can fit in with your wardrobe. I mean, I'm not like an avid anorak fan.
But so to clarify, you would be using it for practical purposes?
Like, I think that would be the kind of first choice, but I wouldn't be adverse to wearing one at all.
Interesting. Tamara?
I'm just I can't see myself in an anorak at all.
Well, your style is very feminine.
Yeah, you're quite glam.
I just couldn't pull it off. I also don't have any practical coats. I think I've got one parka with a hood. You know, that's it. So an anorak, it's just, I couldn't do it. I feel like I'm going back in time, like when I was younger, and no. Just no.
I'm the same as you. Actually, now you're saying that I don't have any practical coats either. Yeah. I don't have anything with a hood.
I also, I think, I wouldn't know how to make it look cool.
I think it's tricky because you can just look like you're wearing an anorak. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't know, when I'm looking at this piece, it kind of reminds you of that Alexa Chung, someone who's got like a really innate, amazing style, can really pull it off.
I think if you kind of wear it with a pair of blue jeans and roll up the sleeves, then I get that. You've got that Alexa or Glastonbury kind of look. Lou?
I love it. I just think like, with practical fashion, in previous years, there have been such unattractive options for these practical pieces. Mm. And when you then do want to buy something like that, your options are just so ugly. And why should dressing practically mean it also has to look rubbish? So I just like that if that is your vibe and you want to wear something that's practical, you can now just get some cool options.
Yeah.
And not that they're sort of super out there, but I just think it is just a slightly more interesting way of putting it, basically.
I think that's true. Well, there are many options out there, whether it's a khaki style from H&M to actually Marge have some really cool
Marge's colour right now.
Yeah, Marge got a metallic
one. Marge's snakeskin one is quite new, Charlotte.
Yeah, the snakeskin one is. Yeah,
I appreciate their cool. I just couldn't pull it off.
That's so fair. Well, if you do feel like buying an anorak, then check out our piece on the site. I think that's just about it for this week. If you have any feedback at all, please do email podcast@sheerluxe.com. We really want to know your thoughts, good or bad. Also, please do rate, review, subscribe, and tell your friends. Bye-bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.